Hello, my wonderful audience. Thank you so much for returning. I'm sorry that I have not been reading the book. It has been very hectic in my life recently, but today we are going to try to get in at least 4 to 5 chapters. So grab your snack, grab your drink, and just relax because it's going to be a long one. So far, just a quick recap. Somebody went on a date with Luke and had fallen asleep, and the phone was on vibrate. And when they got home, her mom started telling them off, like, where were you? Why didn't you call? Until she looked at her mom and was like, hi, hello. Remember, I don't remember after 4 a.m. So her mom kind of let it slide. But we never really found out what exactly happened to Luke. So hoping that maybe they'll say it now. But I mean, we just need to get on reading to find out. So, chapter 19. It's 2:39 in the morning. My heart is racing. I'm sweating and chugging water and feeling helpless. I turn on the lamp, grab the pen, and at the very end of a very long note about boys and darkness and adulterers and liars, I write this simple antonym. It's not Dad. Then, somehow, amazingly, I will myself to sleep. Monday, January 30th, Sunday. Outfit, faded Levi's, red sweatshirt. School, bring book for English, review drills for Spanish quiz before school, buy SAT prep book. Important stuff. Jamie, still not speaking. Try asking her to help with finding Dad. Read back and look in the big envelope in the desk. Also try to think of a plan to help end her bad relationship. Mom, see the big envelope mentioned above. Luke, super hot boyfriend. He'll be there before school with coffee and food of some sort. Don't worry about breakfast. Dating almost 3.5 months. Super good kisser. Flip through notes and check out the photos all over the room. See Saturday's note about a party at his friend Adam's house. Today we went to the movie Elephant Bride and it was really stupid, but the day was fun anyway. I was a red warrior. I beat him at a fighting video game. Held hands the whole movie and shared popcorn. He called me a popcorn hog. Went to his house after and he plays the guitar for me for a while. Until mom called told me to come home for dinner. We kissed before I got out of the car. Oh, he drives a minivan. Don't hold it against him. Chapter 20. What I'm really thinking about now is, whoa. What comes out of my mouth miraculously is a simple, sultry, hey. Hey yourself, he says, backlit and beautiful, standing on my porch with a lidded coffee cup in his hand. I can see his breath in the frigid air as it escapes his mouth. There is something overwhelming about the moment. His unwavering gaze, effortless smile, and obvious ease. Combined with the winter sunrise, make me feel like my legs might give out underneath me. Ready? He asks gently. Yep, I say in a measured tone that I'm surprised I'm capable of using. I follow him from the porch to the minivan, idling in the driveway. I thought I was prepared. This morning, I read months of notes. I flipped through dozens of photos. But Luke in real life is something else. Luke in real life is something no amount of notes could prepare me for. My living, breathing boyfriend is amazing. Trying to act as if I remember being here before, I slide into the passenger seat and buckle my belt. Once I'm settled, Luke gestures to a coffee waiting for me in the passenger cup holder. There are muffins in the console, he says casually, as he backs out of the driveway. I open the compartment between us to find breakfast from what would be my favorite bakery until it goes out of business in a few years. I know from notes that this has become a ritual. Luke driving me to school each day, often surprising me with morning treats. But thanks to my lack of proper memory, it feels like a first for me today, and I love it. Jamie ever call you back yesterday? Luke asks as he drives. My notes didn't say I called her, but they would have she called back. No, I say, pretty sure that I'm telling the truth. Bummer. Too soon, we're pulling into the parking lot. Even though we're in one of the first cars there, Luke turns into a space in the back room. Easy escape, he says when I look at him quizzically. He puts the gear stick in park but leaves the engine running and the heat pumping. I wonder whether Luke always parks at the back and makes a mental note to include that tonight so I don't wonder again. Are you cold? He asks. No, I'm fine. If anything, I'm hot in this jacket. He turns down the blower. Your hair looks good like that, he says, as easily as someone I've been dating for a while might. He takes a slow sip of his coffee and I will find myself wishing my own nearly empty cup would magically refill itself. I grab a smooth strand of hair. I must have flat ironed it last night. I didn't wash it this morning. Thanks, I say, gazing into his blue eyes. So, what's new? He asks. I have no idea. So I talk about my best friend some more. I'm worried about Jamie, I began cryptically, hoping to draw out information if I've already discussed this particular issue with Luke. According to my notes, I haven't. Then again, notes could be wrong. How come? Luke asks innocently, taking another drink. The parking lot is starting to fill before us, but we are in our own world. Can I tell you something in confidence? I ask. Of course, you know you can trust me, London. I do know that, I think to myself. Okay, I begin. You can't tell anyone. Of course, he says, as if it's a given. I sit for a moment, looking into Luke's expectant eyes, trying to think of a way to buffer what I'm going to say. Instead, I finally just blurt out, Jamie is having an affair with a teacher, a married teacher. Luke doesn't make a sound, but his jaw drops slightly, and then he recovers. Wow, he says, clearly letting the news settle in his brain. I try to talk her out of it, but she's too stubborn to listen, I continue. How long has this been going on? He asks. It started around the time we met. I think I see a speck of heart flash across his eyes. Maybe because I didn't tell him sooner. I'm surprised myself that I haven't, but it's not really my secret to tell. And here now, sharing it anyway, I can't help but feel a bit guilty. Which teacher? Luke asks, and all of a sudden, I'm defensive. Doesn't matter, I snap. Whoa, calm down, he snaps back, making me wonder whether we're going to have our first fight. Just asking, he says, looking towards the line of cars pulling into the parking lot. Sorry, it's just a sensitive subject. No matter how stupid she is sometimes, Jamie's still my best friend. But I didn't mean to bite your head off. Luke looks back into my eyes and smiles. I can see we're okay, but just to make sure I add, it's Mr. Rice. Driver's Ed? Luke asks. I nod. I guess I can see that, Luke says. He's young and all. At least it's not Mr. Alice. Ew, gross! I squeal, and we chuckle a little at something that really isn't that funny. But it lightens the mood just the same. A car parks in the space on Luke's side, and two girls get out, looking aimlessly at him and scowling at me. As they walk towards the school, I remember that one of them is going to get pregnant at the end of next year. I feel like shouting after her, use protection! Instead, I keep the conversation going. I really don't know what to do, and want to find a way to end the relationship without having Jamie know it was me. What, you mean like telling her? In a way, yes. Or telling on her. That's another possible way. What if she gets in trouble? He asks softly. Luke drains his coffee cup and I admire his profile. I don't want that, but I wanted to stop and Jamie isn't willing to listen to me. In fact, she's not even speaking to me because I told her that I was worried. That's a tough one, Luke says sincerely. I know, but I'll figure it out. There's gotta be a way. I say more to myself than to him. I'll help you however I can, he replies. Even though I think he knows, I'll just talk to myself too. Luke grabs my hand over the center compartment and squeezes it gently. The parking lot is nearly full now. We should go in, he says, somewhat disappointed. Guess so. He turns the keys and the van is silent. I unbuckle my belt and yank my backpack off the floor in front of my feet. Opening the door, I feel a frigid blast of wind that's in stark contrast to the warmth of the van. I hop out, slam the door, and shiver my way to the front of the car to meet Luke. He looks unfazed. Aren't you cold? I ask. Not really, he replies with a shrug. This is no match for the Charles, he adds, confusing me. Luke grabs my hand and we walk quickly towards the building. His fingers are calloused and I wonder if it's from playing guitar. Halfway through the parking lot, a car is pulling into one of the few vacant spots. It is a blue four-door sedan that someone's mother might drive. Then I realize that Brad from math is driving it. I wave. He glares at me in return. What I did to Brad to provoke with such disdain, I have no idea. But right now, walking hand in hand with my perfect boyfriend on a sunny crisp morning, I don't care about Brad from math. I don't care about anything at all, except Luke. Are you sure I can't switch partners? Jamie asks Miss Garcia. Not too discreetly. A few of our classmates are staring at me to gauge my reaction. Miss Connor, as I told you now a half dozen times, the partner you choose at the beginning of the year is the partner you will have until the end. I don't want to hear another word about it. Miss Garcia turns her back on Jamie and starts writing today's lesson agenda on the whiteboard. Jamie rolls her eyes and charges back to her desk, which she picks up and plunks down with a loud bang, so now it's facing mine. Ugh, whatever, she mutters as she flops into her seat. Hi, Jay. I say quietly. Don't talk to me, she snaps. I have to. We have an assignment. Then only talk to me in Spanish, she commands. Hola, Jamie, I say as a joke. She doesn't laugh, opting to roll her eyes again instead. I decide to try a new tack, courtesy of a backdated note. I need your help, I say quietly. Ask your precious Luke for help, Jamie says loudly, without looking up from our assignment. I want to track down my dad. Jamie flinches a little. Her face softens. Still, her response is bitter. Google him. I tried, I say, without knowing whether I have already. You're so transparent, Jamie says, still not looking at me. Not sure what she means, I keep quiet. She sighs and glares right into my eyes. You're trying to be all casual, but what you really want is for me to look into my mom's files, right? She asks, acting put off. And yes, there's a slight softness to her tone. I know I've got her. I can't pinpoint why, but Jamie will always agree to help me. Maybe she figures I'm lost without her. In many ways, I am. Still, I have no idea what files she's talking about. Is that what you're getting at? You want me to look up your dad's information in my mom's legal files? The word legal makes a click. Jamie's mom will be a divorce lawyer for many years. She probably handled my parents' split, letting Jamie assume this was my plan all along. I agree. You've got me, I say, looking as sheepish as possible without actually feeling that way. Listen, Jamie, I know you're mad at me, and that's fine, but this is important. I don't remember my father at all. You know that. But I want to, and I really need your help. Will you help me? Sure. I started the conversation to get Jamie to talk to me, but ultimately, I do want to find my dad. This is the best of both worlds. Maybe, Jamie says, with a shrug, before refocusing on our assignment. Thanks, I whisper across the table, eyeing at her. She ignores me completely for the rest of the class. Chapter 21. It's nearly bedtime, and my mom is still out showing houses. Despite being angry with her about what she's been hiding from me, I feel sorry for her having to be out so late. Pajama clad, face washed, teeth brushed, I retrieve the envelope from my desk drawer. The metal clasp is worn from being opened and closed many times. I know I found the items inside 3.5 months ago. I know I haven't done much of the information. Emptying the photos and cards onto my bedspread, I slowly, meticulously look through them. Vacation photos, shots in the backyard, holidays. We seem happy. I know I found the items, but I can't help but wonder why she was hiding it from me. Looking at my father's face, I can't help but recall the one memory I have him from the future. The one that plagues me. I don't know how I got there. I just don't. I'm just there among dozens of mourners experiencing various states of grief. The brick wall of a man holds back his tears. The younger man with the 80s hairstyle weeps freely. Wet from the rain, stricken with grief, my grandmother crumbles. Beside me, my mother sobs. Looking young, vulnerable. A woman in a low-cut dress tries to keep her composure, probably for the sake of the small boy in front of her. Footsteps crowd the muddy path like breadcrumbs leading to sadness. Even the stone statue to my left cries from the unknown guest of honor. I grab my notebook and read back about how I used to think it was my father's funeral. I scoff at myself now, remembering my father arriving late, standing near the back, far from both my mother and his own, and fighting back emotion as the priest I can't hear delivers his message. I remember willing myself to look away and seeing the caretaker in the distance, watching us, watching me. He's standing in the front of a tool shed, disguised as a mausoleum, and he smiles. It's not an all-out smile. It's the one you use when you want to make someone feel better, and smiling is all you can do. It makes me want to run over and kick him, but I don't. Instead, I stare back until he tosses his cigarette to the ground and saunters inside the shed. The funeral is over. My father is gone. Grandma is gone. Everyone is gone. And still, even as I turn to follow my mother, I can't see the grave. Try as I might, I can't look down. Somewhere deep inside, I won't let myself remember who is in the hole in the ground. My thoughts turn to Luke. Is it him? It can't be him. Why would my father return after years of absence to attend a funeral for my boyfriend? And my grandmother. It doesn't fit. It's not Luke. And yet, when I flip through my spiral bound substitute for a proper memory again, one truth becomes clear. The darkest memory showed up when he did. Exhausted from the day and the weight of what's coming, I gather the photos and cards before me into a neat stack and ease them back inside the manila envelope. I fold down the clasp to hold it shut, replace it inside the desk drawer, and set my notes on my nightstand. After scooting under the covers, I reread the note I left myself, just to make sure everything's there. I add a few details about the memory and a question. How is Luke involved? The garage door begins to open. My mom is home. Instead of waiting to say goodnight, I put the note on my nightstand, click off the lamp, and roll onto my side, facing the wall. Two questions volley back and forth in my mind. Why can't I remember Luke? Whose funeral is it? I'm watching the tennis match with my eyes closed when my mom ekes open my door and whispers, barely audibly, "Good night, sweet London." Her words are like a sleeping pill. They instantly relax me. Soon the tennis match is over. It's love, love, no resolution. Chapter 22. Walking alone from the locker room to the gymnasium, I am lamenting the fact that it's Thursday. Thursdays are odd block days, 90 minutes each of my least favorite classes. No Luke to enjoy. Then again, no Jamie either. I'm pondering what to do about Jamie as I lean into the bar across the middle of the massive gym doors and set foot onto the gleaming court. It's loud and alive with squeaking sneakers and shouts and pants, and the sensory overload distracts me to the point that I don't see it coming. Before I have time to jump, duck, or even flinch, my thoughts are obliterated by the weight of a massive rubber ball slamming into the right side of my face. The momentum knocks me sideways and then off balance. I trip over my own feet and fall, without even a smidgen of grace, to the ground. A loud, embarrassing oof comes out of my mouth as my hip hits the floor first, followed by my ribs and then my head. My right ear rings and my cheek tingles and burns at the same time. Hand to cheek, I realize that the rubber ball left a pattern on my skin. I brush the hair that I haven't had the chance to pull back into a ponytail from my face, then blink once to clear the water from my eyes. With one good ear and only partial vision, I experience the fallout. Everyone in first period PE is laughing at me. Some try to hide it. Others are actually pointing in my direction. Jerks. I struggle to get back on my feet, but my senses are still off, and it's a lot more difficult than it should be. I feel a little drunk. And yes, I know what that feels like. I remember it. Once I finally make it to my feet and the crowd begins to scatter, my eyes catch Paige Thomas's. There's a nasty smirk on her face as she quickly looks away. Before I have too much time to dwell on it, a shrill whistle blows. Miss Martinez commands the room, and I grudgingly join one of two teams. For the rest of the period, I try to defend myself as best as I can through an excruciating game that should be banned from high school and general play forever. It is nothing but pain and humiliation. It should be avoided at all costs. It is the reason this morning's note warned, stay alert, first period. It is hell on earth. It is dodgeball. Hours later, during Miss Harris's lecture on the hippocampus in human anatomy, Ryan Green keeps glancing at me from across his aisle. Though the ball mark is gone, my face and ego still sting from this morning, but I'm smiling and I can't stop. It hurts my cheeks and Ryan is gawking. Probably because the hippocampus isn't that exciting, but I don't care. I saw Luke before class. "Something funny, London?" Miss Harris interrupts. She stopped writing mid-sentence and is holding the blue dry erase marker in mid-air. One of her perfectly curvy hips is popped to the side and a manicured hand rests there waiting. She looks like a little like one of the cheerleaders did earlier today. That's concerning, seeing as how Miss Harris is a teacher and all. Shouldn't she reserve judgment? Though I'm fairly certain that the majority of them are as bored by the anatomy of the brain as I am, the students in my line of sight now look annoyed at the interruption. More likely, they're just annoyed Miss Harris turned around. London, is there a joke? She asks again when I don't speak. She tosses her dyed red hair and I wonder if she's jealous that mine is real. No, Miss Harris, I say quietly. I try to think of something depressing, but the smile hangs on. Miss Harris stares at me unblinkingly for what seems like days. When she feels convinced that I'm either a bad seed or insane, she sighs and turns back to the whiteboard. The rest of the students write themselves on their stools, and I relax too. I take a deep breath of stale science wing air and loosen my grip on the metal table. My happy moment ruined. I focus on what Miss Harris is saying, most of it completely snore-inducing. But then she says something that grabs my interest. Possible that we store different types of memories in different parts of our brains. Intrigued, I sit up a little straighter. I need to hear what she'll say next. She turns and writes, types of memories, on the whiteboard. Just as she's underlining her header, the bell rings. Class dismissed. A little over an hour later, Mom is driving in the opposite direction of home, looking determined. Where are you going? Out for a snack, she says. I'm not hungry, I protest. I don't care, she says. You don't have to eat. But I think we need to spend some time together. Uh-oh. Mom pulls into a diner and parks, and we walk inside and seat ourselves as the sign instructs. Once the waitress has taken our drink, orders dye for Mom, regular for me, Mom strikes up a conversation. Good day, she asks. No, I answer. Why not? The waitress delivers our drinks, and my mom unwraps our straws and puts them in the glasses. She takes a sip as she waits for me to respond. I got hit in the face of the bowling gym, I answer. Are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. Good, she says. Another sip. Anything else? Carly Lynch. Ugh, what did she do this time? Mom asks. She has made some comment about my outfit. I love that outfit. Me too, I say. You know, she's just jealous of you, London. No, I don't know, Mom. I don't remember. Was Jamie there? My mom asks casually. No, of course not, I mutter. Still fighting? Obviously, I say, rolling my eyes. A family scoots into the next booth over, and I watch them settle themselves as my mom speaks in a quieter tone. For that, I'm grateful. There's no need to get snippy, sweetie. Jamie will come around. She always does. And Carly is just because of a boy. Christopher something. They went out for a while and broke up. Then you asked him to a dance. I asked the boy to a dance. It was a turnabout dance where the girls asked the boys. Jamie talked you into it. Anyway, you weren't interested in him after that one date, but Carly's always held a grudge. I told you all that? We used to talk more, Mom says, with a hurt look in her eyes. I'm guilty of putting it there. I don't say anything back. The waitress returns and asks what we like to eat. Mom orders a plate of onion rings for us to share. I love onion rings. The waitress moves to the next table over, and I watch the father order for his family. I'm aware of my envy as he chats with his daughter and son. When did Dad leave? I ask my mom out of the blue. Her eyes grow wide as she swallows the soda she's just sipped. Where did that come from? She asks. I shrug. Is that what's been bothering you lately? You want to know about your dad? Maybe. Mom fidgets in her seat a little and then clears her throat. Okay, she says softly. I've told you this before and I'll tell you again. Your father and I weren't meant to be together. We didn't get along. And he left when you were 6. That's really the end of the story. I think back to my notes. My memory went crazy when I was 6. Do you think Dad leaving us traumatized me? I've considered that, Mom admits, looking incredibly uncomfortable. So, what, you just fell out of love with each other? I ask. My mom doesn't meet my gaze when she replies, yes. And we never heard from him again? No, she says. The letters at home tell me that she's lying, but I hide my anger. I press the issue. He never tried to talk to me or anything? I swear I see a flash of guilt in my mother's eyes when she answers. No, honey, I'm sorry. He never did. I don't believe you, I think. And then our onion rings arrive. When I get home, I try calling Jamie. She picks up on the third ring. You need to stop talking to me. And you need to stop stalking me, she says sharply. Hi to you too, I say. Seriously, I got your message earlier. I got all your messages. When I'm ready to talk to you, I'll call. But Jamie, don't you think we should just talk about it? Do you even remember what it is, London? Yes, I say quietly. My notes are resting on my lap. But not really, Jamie snaps at me. See you, get to go to sleep, and forget everything. I don't have that luxury. It's not a luxury, I protest. Whatever, I have to go now. But Jay, are we ever going to talk again? I don't know, London. Are we? Click. What's wrong? Luke asks over the phone. Nothing, I lie. No, really, what is it? I can hear it in your voice. I smile weakly. Why can't I remember you? Bad day, I reply, shrugging, though he can't see it. What happened? Luke presses. I decide to let him in a little. My mom and I aren't really getting along, and she made me go and talk about my feelings after school. Then I try to call Jamie, and she basically cut me off and hung up on me. I'm really sick of her drama, I say bitterly. Remembering forwards to what I would consider some unnecessarily long arguments in the future. She's just as self-absorbed. Everything is about her. It drives me crazy sometimes. Luke laughs a little. What? I reply angrily. Nothing. I've just never heard you mad. It's cute. It's not cute, I playfully shout at him. He laughs harder and I join in. When we stop, Luke asks, seriously though, what can I do to help? It's just nice to talk to you, I say quietly. This helps. I'm sorry I didn't call it sooner, Luke says in a low voice, sending chills down my spine. I was painting. It's no big deal, I say, shrugging again. I was eating onion rings and talking about feelings with my mom anyway. So tell me about the... Luke abruptly stops talking on the other end of the phone. Just a second, he whispers. I hear Luke's hand moving over the mouthpiece and then a woman's muffled voice. Luke's reply is louder but equally jumbled. Soon enough, he's back. Sorry, he says, returning to the conversation. That was my mom. She wants me to get off the phone. She says too late to talk. Oh, I say, trying not to sound disappointed, even though I know that my mom would feel the same way. Alright, I guess. We can catch up tomorrow then. Okay, Luke says. Good night, Luke. Sweet dreams, London. He disconnects the call. In the darkness, I stare at my phone for a few minutes, reveling in the warm feeling I got from the short conversation with Luke. I know I need to add the details of the call to the note on my nightstand, but I don't want to move just yet. When I finally will myself to turn on the light and spoil my zen moment, my annoying ringtone sounds again. My heart leaps. "Hello?" I say quickly. "I forgot to tell you that you looked really pretty today," Luke says in a whisper. In the darkness, I feel my face flush. "Thank you," I whisper back. "You're welcome." For a few seconds, we are quiet. Every muscle in my body is tense, in a good way. It's excruciating, intimate. I'm lying in my bed, clutching the phone like a lifeline, hearing nothing but Luke's measured inhale and exhale, and my own quickening heartbeat. If he were here right now, I'd kiss him. "Well, I guess I should go. My mom might come back," Luke whispers, breaking the moment. "Okay," I answer, unable to say more. "See you tomorrow," he says. "Okay, bye, Luke." I can't manage to get anything else out. "Bye, London," he says before hanging up, the sound of my name from his lips sending chills through me again. I clutch the phone to my chest and exhale sharply, then sit up and snap on the small lamp at my bedside. I update tonight's note, and as I'm doing so, my own mom pops her head into my room. "It's late," she says. "I know, I'm finishing up," I answer without looking at her. "Sleep tight," mom says. "Thanks. I love you, London," she says. I sigh deeply and say half-heartedly, "I love you too." My eyes are still on my paper. I resume writing and sometime before I finish, chronicling my call for Luke and turn off the light. My mom suddenly disappears. So, it's currently a little late, so we're going to stop off on chapter 23. But we did go from 19 to 23, so I think that's a good bit. The last one that I did, I left off about 55 minutes. So about half an hour to 40 minutes of reading, I think, is good for tonight. And it is currently Monday in Bermuda, so I hope you guys have a wonderful work week. And I will try my best to return tomorrow night for the usual reading. So, thank you so much for joining us, and have a good one. Bye.